Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk. We have a big show for you today. Let's give you a quick preview. First, more information on Uvalde, the shooting down in Uvalde, Texas. Well, the State House report has come out, and it is worse than we thought. Speaking of school shooter cowards, let's talk about Nicholas Cruz. The jury is set to decide his fate, whether he lives or dies. Roman Polanski. Some would say he's a coward as well. Is this the new California? Well, we can take a look on the video and see. A woman comes out of a coma that she's been in for the last 2 years and immediately identifies her attacker. The Elizabeth Smart trial begins today. Two defendants on trial for that. And then finally, our dumb criminal of the day. Let's talk about it. All right, aficionados, you know the drill. Subscribe if you haven't. Hit that like button if you do. And hit that little bell so you receive notifications of when we go live or put up new content. So lately, I've been trying to cut back on my Red Bull intake because I feel like lately it's been a little more difficult to fall asleep. And if you've been a fan for a while, you know that I also don't drink coffee. So I've been trying these little bottles of Magic Mind. So if you're like me and you don't like the crashes and jitters that come from coffee and Red Bull, then you have to try out my new favorite caffeine hack, Magic Mind. I love that they are small and easy to transport. I usually drink them on the way to work in the morning, and by the time I'm at my desk, I am ready to take on whatever craziness the world is going to throw at me. Magic Mind also has ashwagandha in it, which works to decrease stress, which certainly I can use a little of. And I'm looking into stocking the fridge here with Magic Mind so that my whole team can feel the benefits. So they gave me a great discount code. All you have to do is go to magicmind.co and use the code CT40, that's short for Crime Talk 40, for 40% off your first subscription. Or if you aren't into that, you can get 20% off your first purchase. I'll leave the notes in the show link. And the best part is that they have a money back guarantee, because you know it's always about the money. Go to www.magicmind.co/crimetalkdiscount code CT40. All right, let's go ahead and open the record for July 18th, 2022. First, it's worse than we thought. There's some new Uvalde body cam footage that comes amid release of the 77-page report by the Texas House of Representatives, which holds states and federal police officers pretty much responsible for the Uvalde shooting massacre. Now, the House probe marked the most exhaustive attempts so far to determine why it took more than an hour for police and other officers to confront and kill that coward Ramos. Now, the report blasted system failures and egregious poor decision-making by nearly all of those in power during the attack, noting how 376 law enforcement officers rushed to the school in a chaotic scene marked by a lack of clear leadership and sufficient urgency. Other than the attacker, the committee did not find any villains in the course of its investigation. The report stated, "Instead, we found systemic failures and egregious poor decision-making. The void of leadership could have contributed to the loss of life as injured victims waited an hour for help, and the attacker continued to sporadically fire his weapon." It is also claimed the 149 United States Border Patrol agents and 91 state police on the scene should have helped with the unfolding chaos. There was an overall lackadaisical approach by law enforcement at the scene, the report read, and for many, that was because they were given and relied upon inaccurate information. For others, they had enough information to know better. The bottom line in the report is what they found is that law enforcement responders failed to adhere to their active shooter training, and they failed to prioritize saving the lives of innocent victims over their own safety. Now, the Uvalde mayor, Don McLaughlin, said in an emailed statement that the city has placed Lieutenant Mariano Pargas, who was acting city police chief on the day of the shooting, on administrative leave. State police officials have sharply criticized the leadership of Arredondo, the police chief of the school district's six-man police force, who state police have said was in control of the scene. But the report noted that hundreds of the officers from agencies that were better trained and better equipped than the school police force badly failed as well. Despite an obvious atmosphere of chaos, the ranking officers and other responding agencies did not approach Arredondo or anyone else perceived to be in command to point out the lack of and need for a command post or to offer that specific assistance, according to the report. These local officials were not the only ones expected to supply the leadership needed during this tragedy. Now, hundreds of responders from numerous law enforcement agencies, many of whom were better trained and better equipped than the school district police, quickly arrived on the scene. Now, in this crisis, no responder seized the initiative to establish an incident command post, the report found, and despite an obvious atmosphere of chaos, the ranking officers and other responding agencies did not approach the Uvalde or anyone else perceived to be in command to point out the lack of and need for a command post or offer that specific assistance. Now, the report also found that the Robb Elementary School failed to adhere to a number of basic safety protocols, which include a lack of keys, leading to teachers regularly leaving the doors unlocked or even propping them open. Door and lock maintenance did not receive adequate attention from the school district, the report noted, pointing out that though the lock in one of the rooms where the shooting took place was known to be unreliable, it was not repaired. In particular, the locking mechanism to room 111 was widely known to be faulty, yet it was not repaired. In this crisis, no responder seized the initiative to establish an incident command post, as they noted in the report, and despite an obvious atmosphere of chaos, the ranking officers and other officers didn't approach anybody to take command. Leading to some of the complacency by the school was that there were 47 lockdown events between May and February, 90% of which concerned Border Patrol activity. And the report revealed that Ramos provided a number of warning signs that he was dangerous, but nobody really did anything to address him. In one of the incidents, Ramos sent someone a message on an Instagram on April 2nd saying, "Are you still going to remember me in 50-something days?" The person responded, "Probably not." Ramos said, "All right, we'll see in May." That's what Ramos replied back. He was also obsessed with gore and violent sex online, posting videos of suicides and beheadings, and harassing women who he played video games with. He was also fired from his job at Whataburger after threatening a female coworker. Gee, hardly any signs at all. Well, despite his violent behavior, no red flags were raised about Ramos, and he was never reported to authorities. At one point, an officer whose daughter was inside the classroom was seen being restrained by fellow officers, preventing him from attempting to rescue his daughter. The video shows how it took officers a full 77 minutes to breach the door to the classroom, where Ramos unloaded more than 100 rounds into his victims. Ramos entered the school at 11:33 and wasn't shot dead until 12:50 p.m. The gunman wasn't stopped until Border Patrol agents entered the building and shot and killed him. Now, the body cam footage captured the moment the Uvalde school police chief repeatedly begged an 18-year-old gunman to put down his weapon after he opened fire in the classroom. The Robb Elementary School police chief, Peter Arredondo, was recorded standing outside the classroom trying to negotiate with Salvador Ramos rather than engage the mass shooter. And he ultimately never responded to the police chief's pleas. Arredondo urged him to talk to him, trying to assure him that this could be end peacefully, and asking him to please put your firearm down. I think it's pretty clear, ladies and gentlemen, I think you all know how I feel about these school shooters. I think they are all cowards, okay? They go to a place that is supposed to be for peaceful, for children, for God's sakes. And they go to these soft targets where they know they're not gonna get shot at. And they go in and kill innocent children who've done nothing to them whatsoever. And the bottom line is, they being the police, just need to go in and take these shooters out as quickly as possible. And guess what? You don't negotiate with terrorists. And that's all this guy is. He was a punk and they waited too long. And I was trying to give the police officer some hope here. Maybe it wasn't that bad, but this report, when you read it, it's worse than you actually thought. 77 minutes, they know what's going on. They know when those gunshots are being fired, the kids are more than likely being killed, and they wait. I mean, I don't know. One person put on leave, that's it. The acting police chief, that's it. but no one's been fired. Something to think about. Let me know what you think should happen. Speaking of cowards, a jury will soon determine if confessed Parkland shooter Nicholas Cruz will be sentenced to death or whether he's going to get life. Now, opening statements began today in the penalty phase of Cruz's trial, and the trial is expected to take several months. At the conclusion, the jury's decision must be unanimous to sentence him to death. Now, the prosecutor said in his opening statement, 3 days before the massacre, Cruz made a video saying, "My name is Nick. I'm going to be the next school shooter of 2018. My goal is at least 20 people with an AR-15 and some tracer rounds. It's going to be a big event, and when you see me on the news, you'll know who I am. You are all going to die. I can't wait." Well, there's a sign, isn't it? And yet nobody reports anybody. Well, the prosecutor described the shooting as planned and systematic mass murder. And as you may recall, back in February 14th of 2018, then 19 gunned down 14 students and three staff members at the former school, Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in South Florida. On the day of the shooting, Cruz, wearing a backpack and carrying a case with a rifle inside, walked 360 feet from the road to the Dorr building. Cruz warned a student in the stairwell to leave, saying something bad is about to happen, after which the student ran to find a campus monitor. The rampage began at 2:22 p.m. as Cruz opened fire on four students standing in a first floor hallway. 70 shots were fired on the first floor. After firing shots on the second floor, Cruz went to the third floor, where among those killed was teachers Scott Beagle, who was shepherding kids to safety in the classroom. A total of 139 rounds were fired in Building 12, and the prosecutor said Cruz then fled the school by blending in with other students. He was arrested around 3:40 p.m., about 2.9 miles away from the school. Now, Cruz pled guilty back in October of 2021 to 17 counts of first-degree murder and 17 counts of attempted first-degree murder. Cruz said in court last year, "I'm very sorry for what I did, and I have to live with it every day. It brings me nightmares, and I can't live with myself sometimes." Cruz, now is the deadliest mass shooter to ever go before a jury, said to the court that he believes the victims' families should be the ones to decide whether he gets the death penalty. Well, guess what, Mr. Cruz? It doesn't work that way. The jury, the community is going to decide. Let me know what you think should happen to him, okay? Clearly planned, clearly after deliberation. Okay, I get it, he's young, but really, what should be the ultimate punishment? Do we punish him by keeping him in prison for the rest of his life? Or does the state do the ultimate penalty? What good is he going to provide to us after doing something as atrocious as that? Let me know. Let me know what you think should happen to Mr. Cruz. Now, since we're talking about a lot of cowards today, we can probably talk about Roman Polanski. Now, this is an old case, ladies and gentlemen. It's been going on forever. And Roman Polanski, you know, he's a famous movie director, producer. Well, probably not one of the best guys in the world, at least if you have teenage daughters. So for those who don't recall, Mr. Polanski fled from Los Angeles to France in 1978 on the eve of his sentencing for sexually assaulting a 13-year-old girl. After the judge in the case privately reneged on a promise not to jail him. Now, how do we know this? Well, there's been some unsealed documents from the 45-year-old case just recently. So Polanski, who's now 88, was found to have sex with a 13-year-old girl by the name of Samantha Grimer at Jack Nicholson's house back in 1977. She told police that he gave her a sedative that forced her into sex, and her mother later reported it to the police. So as I stated, apparently there was some sort of side deal going on back in 1978 that Polanski was due to be sentenced to probation by a judge by the name of Lawrence Rittenbrand, but at the last minute discovered the judge planned to jail him for up to 120 days instead. Now, Rittenbrand, who died in 1993, said he had been influenced by the media and needed to be tougher on the then 45-year-old movie director. He promised to get him out in under 120 days, but Polanski, skittish after the reneged deal and fearing he may be put behind bars for longer, ran to France. He's remained in Europe ever since, fighting off efforts to have him extradited and even sentenced in absentia as a fugitive. Now, for decades, the case has been protected by the prosecutors in the LA District Attorney's Office, but now it's being revisited. The newly unsealed documents are hundreds of pages of testimony from former Deputy District Attorney Roger Gunson that have been unsealed after a request from journalists to make the papers public. The request is supported by everyone involved, even Polanski. Now, Polanski wanted them to be made public for the judicial misconduct, and Grimer, the young woman, now 59, wants the case to be dismissed. Gunson gave the testimony back in 2010 at the request of Polanski's legal team. At the time, he was suffering from an unspecified health issue that Polanski's team feared may prevent him from testifying later if the case was reopened. The testimony seems to confirm Polanski's claim that the judge behaved improperly and shows how almost everyone involved, the prosecutors, Polanski, and the victim, were dissatisfied. The judge had promised him on two occasions something that he reneged on. So it wasn't surprising to me, the prosecutor, when he was told he was going to be sent off to a state prison, that he could not or would not trust the judge, Gunson said. He testified that Rittenbrand took advice on the case from all over the place, being easily influenced by the media and celebrities. Gunson even tried to have him recused, but his request was shot down by his superiors. He said that it was wrong for Rittenbrand to renege on his promise of a light sentence, but the former prosecutor said that it was wrong to have offered Polanski the deal in the first place. He also testified about the other flaws in the investigation. The victim previously testified before a grand jury that during a photo shoot at Jack Nicholson's house in March of 1977, when the actor wasn't home, Polanski gave her champagne and parts of a sedative, then had sex with her. She didn't fight him because she was afraid of him, apparently, but her mother later called the police. When she refused to testify in court, Polanski pled guilty to unlawful sex with a minor in exchange for prosecutors dropping the drug, rape, and sodomy charges. Rittenbrand was going to sentence Polanski to state prison in 1978 for 90 days. He spent 42 days there for a psychiatric evaluation and received a recommendation from the prison that the film director should not serve any additional time. Well, Rittenbrand vowed to stay on the bench until the director returned to the United States. He retired in 1989 and he died 4 years later. Now, Gunson, the prosecutor, wrote that Rittenbrand thought the recommendation was whitewashed and told Polanski's team he would sentence him to 120 days in prison but would get him out sooner. Gunson all acknowledged that his testimony that the judge had discretion to sentence Polanski up to 50 years because there had been no agreed upon sentence. That's what's referred to as a stipulated sentence. This was an open sentence where the judge could say, I'm gonna give you 50 years or I could give you 120 days. Fearing the worst, Polanski fled. Now in 2017, the victim traveled from her home in Hawaii to Los Angeles to urge the judge to end a 40-year sentence which had been imposed on the victim of the crime as well as the perpetrator. And she stated, I implore you to consider taking action to finally bring this matter to a close as an act of mercy, Ms. Grimer, the victim, stated. And Grimer went public years ago and wrote a memoir titled The Girl, A Life in the Shadow of Roman Polanski. The cover features a photo shot by Polanski. Last month, she implored Gascon, the district attorney in L.A., to have the documents unsealed. And in a statement last week, he finally agreed. Weird case, ladies and gentlemen. I get it. People get scared. But, you know, that's what's wrong when you have judges making concessions or saying, yeah, I'm going to give a deal. You know, if it's not on the record, it doesn't happen. It's not an agreement. But to flee, it's not like Polanski saying that he was innocent. He just didn't want to go to prison for longer than what he thought he was going to get, which was originally probation. You know, obviously Polanski's lived on the other side of the world, but everybody seems to think he's the greatest guy in the world. But on the other hand, he had sex with a 13-year-old. That's illegal. That's wrong. And if you do that, you're not a good guy. I don't care what your other accomplishments are. You're not a good guy. All right, take a look at this video. Is this the new California? This video shows a brazen group of thieves snatching armloads of designer bags from a high-end store before fleeing out the front door in broad daylight. It happened about 2 p.m. on July 12th at the Maxfield store at the Malibu Lumber Yard Shopping Center. At least six suspects, male and female, barged into the store, body slammed a security guard, and made off with the goods. This is according to this sheriff's spokesperson. No one was injured. The robbers made off with nearly $100,000 of merchandise, adding that it was fairly easy for the thieves to unload their goods on the black market. What's the good of having a security guard, ladies and gentlemen, if they can't fire on the people stealing the property? And I know it's just property. Then you know what? Don't put a security guard in there. Just put in there, come and take our goods for free. The laws need to be changed. It's only going to get worse. You should be able to use deadly force if somebody's stealing something that's valued over a certain dollar amount, at least making it a felony. Most places, that's $750 to $1,000. Just saying, I think you'd see a big decrease in crime. And that's the only way it's going to end, because the police don't have time to deal with cases like this. Unless somebody comes forward, there's really nothing for the police to do. Next, a West Virginia woman awoke from years-long coma after she was brutally attacked and identified her brother as the assailant. Wanda Palmer had been in a long-term care facility in New Martinsville, West Virginia, after being beaten in her home back in June of 2020 and left for dead. Palmer's brother was arrested and booked on suspicion of attempted murder and malicious wounding of his sister near Cottageville, West Virginia. When Palmer was discovered, Jackson County Sheriff's Ross Mellinger said she was so savagely attacked, authorities thought that she was dead. Palmer's care facility contacted authorities last week to let them know that the woman had come out of her coma. Medical staff told authorities that despite suffering brain damage from the assault, that Palmer was able to now speak enough and was able to identify her assailant. Officials stated that they believe Daniel Palmer allegedly attacked his sister with a machete or some type of a hammer. He was arrested on suspicion of attempted murder and malicious wounding. It just shows you, ladies and gentlemen, the old no face, no case. If somebody can't come into court and say, that's the person that did it, that's the bad man, that's the bad woman, it makes the case very difficult to prove. But when you come out of your coma and you can say, my brother did it, guess what? The case is back on. Life sometimes can be stranger than fiction. Miss Smart was declared dead back in 2002, and her body has never been found. Well, now Paul Flores, who's 45, was the last person to have been seen with her at the California Polytechnical. Paul Flores, now 45, was the last person to have been seen with Miss Smart at the California Polytechnic State University in San Luis Obispo. He'll now stand trial more than a year after he was arrested on a murder charge, along with his father, Ruben Flores, who is charged as an accessory for allegedly helping his son dispose of her body. Now, the younger Flores allegedly killed the 19-year-old Smart during an attempted rape back on May 25th of 1996 in his dorm room at Cal Poly, where they were both first-year students, according to the prosecutor's theory of the case. His father, now 81, allegedly helped bury the slain student behind his home in the nearby community of Arroyo Grande, and later dug up the remains and moved them. Paul Flores had long been considered a suspect in the killing, but prosecutors only arrested him and his father in 2021 after the investigation was revived. The San Luis Obispo sheriff acknowledged misstep by detectives over the years. He credited a popular podcast about Smart's disappearance called Your Own Backyard for helping unearth new information and inspiring witnesses to speak with investigators. Now, Smart's remains have never been found, and the mystery of how she vanished from the scenic campus tucked against a coastal mountain range is likely to be central to the trial. Investigators have conducted dozens of searches over two decades, but turned their attention in the past 2 years to Ruben Flores' home about 12 miles south of Cal Poly in the community of Arroyo Grande. Behind latticework beneath the deck of his large house on a dead-end street off Tally Ho Road, archaeologists working for police in March of 2021 found a soil disturbance about the size of a casket and the presence of human blood, according to prosecutors. Now, the blood was too degraded to extract a DNA sample. While a blood expert said it was human blood, the test used did not rule out the possibility it was from a ferret or an ape, though court records said no remains of such an animal were found there either. We'll see how this trial plays out, because the trial judge is roughly about the same age as Miss Smart would be today, and she barred suggestions of any alternate suspects unless the attorneys can provide evidence of their direct involvement. You see, there was a lot of speculation early on in this case that, in fact, Scott Peterson could have been the possible suspect because he apparently attended the school at or about the same time. But unless you can provide direct evidence of that, it's just a theory and not one that can be presented to a jury. And in this particular case, there's two juries. Separate juries were selected to weigh the evidence against each of the defendant, and the trial is expected to last about 4 months. And finally, our dumb criminal of the day. Okay, you can't make this stuff up, but his last little quote is absolutely hilarious. So a Florida man has claimed self-defense after slaying his neighbor's pet rooster. Now, James Nick Jr. of Jacksonville, Florida, spent 30 hours in jail for, get this, aggravated animal cruelty back in May. He says he should never have been arrested. Now, Mr. Nick described the incident as, quote, "I'm defending myself," he said. "I was fearing for my safety and the chicken died." He described checking his mail when this rooster ran up on him. He describes the noise he heard by tapping his fingertips hard on the truck behind him in the interview. "And I turn around and there's a chicken out there in the street." And he says, "Oh boy, here we go." Now, Nick's claim he picked up a stick to fend off the rooster, but the chicken's jumping up at me and I accidentally knocked it in the head, you know, call it a lucky shot, whatever. Well, the owner of the chicken, Jason DeFellis, was furious to return home and find that his rooster was dead. He was approached by four children ages 7 to 12 who witnessed the entire slaying of the rooster. DeFellis reported his slain chicken to the sheriff. Police investigated and cited Nick's for animal cruelty back on May 30th, landing him in jail for 30 hours till he could post bond. Now, Nick said he did not understand why his neighbor called the police. He said, quote, "Chickens die every day, people. At churches, Popeyes, Kentucky Fried Chicken." That was his quote, ladies and gentlemen. Chickens die. I still love it. I saw the chicken and was like, all right, let's go. I mean, this is like a scene from, what was his name, Billy Bobby? From Talladega Nights. All right, let's go ahead and close the record on today's show. I want to thank everybody for joining us. Don't forget, tomorrow we have our live program. And remember, if you can't watch us, you can always listen to us by downloading us on your favorite podcasting app, which includes but is not limited to Apple, Spotify, and Audible. Have a wonderful day. We'll see you next time on Crime Talk.